Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. How's everybody doing this morning? Tuesday morning. We're not doing Two for Tuesday this morning. Dan Shugru is out. Our normal DJ is out. Mr. Dan Long is in. So we're going to skip Two for Tuesday this week. So that's happening. And also, we're going to get a special visit from Slip Skipley, Skip's brother. We do another edition of pop-up video a little bit later on. Skip, who sounds suspiciously a lot like Dan Shugru, and Slip, his brother, sounds suspiciously a lot like Dan Long. So he's going to come in and host another edition of the of pop-up video. That's coming up. We're going to talk about your favorite TV shows of all time. I also have a list of the shows, TV shows that have won the most Emmys of all time. And speaking of Emmys, we wanted to get our friend Dan Feinberg's thoughts on the Emmy Awards from Sunday night. And he's TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk to TV in general, but we wanted to bring him in to talk about the Emmys. You can tell The Fine Print. Follow him there, and that's F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan to the show. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Nick.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Still basking in that Emmy glow.
Yes. Well, we'll get to that in a second. I just wanted to mention, how much of The Deuce have you seen?
I have seen all 8 episodes.
Okay. Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. Because they aired episode 2 on Sunday night. I watched it Monday morning, and I thought it was magnificent.
But I can tell you that through 8 episodes, there is no point at which things go clearly wrong.
Good.
So
good. Because I'm
enjoy.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I really do. I just think it's great. So, okay. All right, let's get to the Emmys and talk a little bit about that. First of all, what did you think of Colbert?
I thought that he didn't ruin the show. He also didn't make it a magnificent Stephen Colbert show. He did probably, I guess, what you hope that a host is going to do, in the sense that he was a little bit funny at the top of the show, was maybe funny once or twice during the show, and then pretty much vanished when I didn't need to see him anymore. So I don't want to say it was a great or a perfect job, but it was definitely a painless job. That was my impression. What was your thought?
I thought he was pretty funny. I think I liked what he did a little bit more than you did. I thought the opening was funny. I'm not quite sure about the Spicer thing. I know you have a strong opinion on that about Spicer coming out. I mean, when it first happened, I thought, the crowd reaction was pretty funny and pretty good, especially Anna Chomsky. I thought she was going to have a heart attack. And the director is going to cut back to Melissa McCarthy as often as possible during that bit. I think it took away from some of the stuff that Colbert had did before that in the monologue, which I thought was pretty funny. I know that some people are upset at how political it got, and how many shots Colbert took at Trump, but some of the other folks. But I mean, what was anybody expecting, especially if you hire Colbert to be the host? I mean,
Also, if America elects a reality TV host as president and an Emmy-nominated reality TV host as president, I hate to say this, but that probably opens the door for a little bit of chiding and mockery.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And not to say that Donald Trump has done anything else in his 9 months as president that one could make fun of him for. to use our president's favorite term, it's not as if Hollywood is just making fun of him and he's been just sitting there quietly and discretion being the better part of valor and him taking the high road. No, Donald Trump and his administration have taken aim at Hollywood and at the media for 9 months solid. He has politicized that as much as Hollywood has politicized him. And I would say it's entirely open season because that's just how these things go. And to say nothing of the fact that he's also staged direct assaults on a number of the different individual groups that the Emmys were recognizing and honoring and were celebrating inclusion from. So, yeah, I have no problems with the politics. But again, I wouldn't. So
we were talking about it on the show, and some people were like, I didn't think that Colbert should have gone that far. But if you ever watch The Late Show, that's what he does. That's what he does every night.
And also, to say nothing of going so far, every single one of those jokes he made about how Donald Trump wanted an Emmy and was bitter about not getting Emmys and how that's the reason why he ran for president and all of that. I mean, those stories were all written last fall before those Emmys and had been written a dozen times beforehand. There was nothing fresh or original in anything that Colbert was doing against Trump last night. It was just the same old, same old.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that I think my favorite... I think the funniest moment that involved Colbert, I mean, I thought the opening number was fun. I thought that was pretty funny. The Westworld thing I thought was okay. But I thought the funniest moment was between him and Kimmel after John Oliver won. I thought that was the off the cuff, very funny stuff.
I thought that was a good moment. I thought it was also the only time that they mentioned what happened at the Oscars, and they couldn't ignore it entirely, and I was kind of astounded that in Rachel Bloom's song about the accountants that
yeah.
she didn't mention the Oscar thing. So I'm glad they mentioned it at some point in some way without just coming out and saying, man, you blew it at the Oscars, Kimmel, yeah. blah, blah, blah. Not that it was honestly his fault. No one blames him, but
right.
still they could have joked about it.
Right.
But still, yeah, I was that was one of the few good Colbert moments into the show.
Right. Yeah. So the show itself, here's the some of the things that observations that I made about the broadcast itself. I don't know whose idea it was to have fake paparazzi on stage and take pictures of the winners as they leave. I don't know who thought it was a good idea to have Jermaine Fowler incessantly screaming throughout the entire broadcast. And I don't know who was in charge of the band. Those were the main things that drove me nuts during the ceremony. Where do you stand on that?
I was not bothered in any way by the onstage paparazzi thing. That didn't bother me. Jermaine Fowler was bad and a mistake and the kind of thing that you won't see again. It's not like this is something where every year the networks try different ways of doing announcing and try having a DJ and all of that. It's not like they tried this. This was something CBS tried pretty much on their own to get another one of their personalities onto the show in some capacity. And I do not think that last night was a particularly good commercial for Superior Donuts and for Jermaine Fowler. He was at best not funny, and at worst, he was piggybacking in really awkward ways on like social statements that different winners were making to transition into the next presenters.
Yeah.
It was not good. It was not funny, and it was not comfortable. And as you say, he was yelling the entire time. And while that is his persona, it definitely did not add anything to the show. And the third thing, the band, was your problem just the normal playing off of people? Or
yeah. And else? The song choices I thought were weird. And, They seem particularly loud when they were playing people like what Sterling K. Brown had, by the way, one of the best speeches of the night, if not the best speech of the night, one of the best. I mean, they seriously started blasting music. It wasn't, you know, like normally when they play someone off at an award show, they start out slowly and kind of quietly and build up. These guys started out in sensor round. I was like, what is going on? I found that really disconcerting.
There were several things to that. The first is at least the possibility that what we heard was not what they were hearing in there. And I think that that's not just a possibility. I think it's a strong possibility because the audience continued to respond to things Sterling K. Brown was saying on the stage, even as we could no longer hear a word he was saying. So I think there was at least some amount of the director adjusting the mix.
Mm.
I think that, and then doing that weird thing where he pulled back, as if, okay, time to go to a commercial, and then didn't leave, as if to say, here's this thing that's continuing in the ballroom, and you're not able to hear it, which was not a good way of capturing the moment. I would also say that Sterling K. Brown was challenging the orchestra to play him off and play over him,
mm-hmm.
so maybe they got a little bit louder competitively, but they shouldn't have, and That's, I think, the bottom line, because, as you say, that was the best speech of the night, and I think it was the best speech of the night by a lot. It was this marvelously geeky speech that included everything from Webster to Don Draper's real name to a tribute to Andre Brower and Homicide. It, just a great, great speech,
yeah.
And for a great, great performance, and as it, you say, it got drowned out, and it became awkward as opposed to being pleasant. And then there's the other aspect of it where people on Twitter did math, and he got cut off a solid 45 seconds before where Nicole Kidman ended her speech without getting played off. And so people are naturally drawing a variety of unflattering conclusions. I think the real answer to that is, as shows go long, directors have to start saying, okay, if we didn't play someone off in 2:30, 15 minutes ago, we're playing someone off in 1:45 this time because we have to get done. I think that's the real answer. But in terms of pure optics and avoiding making something look awful, they definitely blew that one.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question about it. And yeah, it was such a great speech. I was really, really thrilled that he mentioned Andre Brower. I thought that was really awesome and appropriate because, you know, Andre Brower is Andre Brower. And to acknowledge Andre Brower in that way, I thought was really pretty great.
And also to acknowledge how long it's been since an African-American man won in that category.
It's true.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time, and a lot of awards last night were handed out to people, and there were all kinds of new records made last night. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a quick break here for the news. And when we come back, Dan and I will continue discussing the Emmys and what he thought of them and the winners, the losers, and we'll go through the list of winners and see what Dan thinks of all of that. And we'll take a quick break here for the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Hi. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Tuesday morning. We're not doing Two for Tuesday this morning. Dan Shugru is off. Dan Long is in. And so we're not going to be doing that. But we are going to be talking about the TV shows that have won the most Emmys ever. And then we're just going to talk about your favorite TV shows of all time that you could watch over and over and over again. We'll have a little pop-up video with Skip's brother Slip. We'll be in this morning for that. But right now we're talking with Dan Feinberg, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV in general. But the Emmys were the other night, and so we wanted to get Dan's thought on that. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
All righty then. So let's talk about some of the firsts from last night. Let's go through some of those. Now, we mentioned that it was the first time in 20 years that an African American actor had won in the best drama, best actor for a drama. But there also were a lot of firsts Sunday night.
Oh, it is just such a long list because, okay, so you had Lena Waithe, who was the first African-American woman to win for writing. I'm no longer sure if it's for writing entirely or just for writing on a comedy series. Regardless, first African-American woman to win in that category for Master of None, the great Thanksgiving episode.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Which she co-wrote with Aziz Ansari, and so, you know, so many kudos to Aziz Ansari for the second time he's won one of these awards for letting his co-writer do the speech.
Yeah, no, it was a wonderful moment, I thought, and it was great, and it was her moment, you know, and he knew it, I have to say that was the only other script in that category that I would have been okay with for BAN not winning. So it was okay.
I think I was feeling the same way. At that point, sure, I would have liked another win for Donald Glover, but And speaking of winners that weren't first time winners, but I believe that Donald Glover's win for acting in a comedy series was the first win for an African American in that category since 1985. So that's again absurd.
Yeah.
But going back to actual firsts, Riz Ahmed, who won for The Night Of, who won for acting in a miniseries or movie, great performance in all of that. First male actor of Asian descent to win an acting Oscar. Again, that's another thing that is absolutely mind-boggling if you stop and think about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I said this in my review, all of these firsts, not a single one is even in the vicinity of a token win, of a people wanting to make history win. Every single one of those winners would have been my first or second choice in those categories and is amazingly, remarkably deserving of their wins. And that's just fantastic because, you know, sometimes people say dumb things about affirmative action or trying to make history or trying to nod to the social justice warriors. No, these were great scripts, great performances, great direction, every single one of it, all remarkable. Speaking of great things that haven't been for a long time, Reed Murano, who won directing in a drama series for the pilot of Handmaid's Tale, first woman to win in that category for 22 years, I think. Just, again, one category after another, it was people either having landmark wins or having, my goodness, it's been a long time since the last time someone like that won. Amazing. And then there's all the people who just won their first Emmys. And those aren't landmarks in a big sense, but, you know, Ann Dowd winning her first Emmy, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
And, of course, Elizabeth Moss winning her first Emmy.
Well, I mean, that, you know, that was the highlight of the night for me, clearly. it was great that I'm so glad she won. She totally deserved it. I mean, you know, a lot of great performances last year. The thing is that there were a lot of great, just a lot of great television from last year, Dan. As you know, I mean, we talk about this every couple of weeks, the amount of good TV that's available on broadcast and streaming and subscription series and all that stuff and cable. It's kind of mind-boggling how good and how much good TV there is. And I think that Sunday night's ceremony and just the quality of the people who were nominated was pretty stunning.
When I go through and think of all of the shows that I love that didn't win anything, and I think of how not irate I am, that to me is a sign of how good the Emmys were. Because if I think, okay, The Leftovers was as good a TV show as there was in the spring. It won no Emmys. I should be angry about that. I can't find a way to be.
Yeah.
While I'm sad about Carrie Coon, she wasn't nominated, so there's nothing you can do there.
Right.
Better Call Saul had its best season by a large amount. It did not win anything. I should be irate about that. I am not. And just one, you know, Fargo, another great season for Fargo, and apparently only Big Little Lies got to win anything in that miniseries category. And I could be upset about that one more than any of the others. If I had to find a category where I felt like really and truly the Emmys needed to share the wealth a little bit, Big Little Lies was not so far and away the best thing in that category that it needed to win every single thing. You could have had David Thewlis win for supporting actor, beating Alexander Sarsgaard, and that would have been perfectly fine and happy for me. But for the most part, I'm not angry about anything that won, and that doesn't happen most years. In fact, it happens almost never.
Yeah, it's absolutely true, and I think that was one of the reasons why I found the show so, you know, much more agreeable to watch. Had there been, you know, more mistakes, or had this Jermaine Fowler guy gotten under my skin a little bit more, followed by someone who won who didn't deserve to win, I would have been a little I would have probably taken it out more on the broadcast itself.
Oh, heaven knows, if Modern Family had won comedy series and House of Cards had won drama, the entire tenor of the evening changes. Everything suddenly goes south, and suddenly it becomes this awful evening that recognized undeserving things and proved how bad the Emmy voters are. But instead, mostly they were good. You can't even be upset about Julia Louis-Dreyfus winning again, even though it's boring as all get out. It's boring, but she's brilliant.
It's funny. It's funny. You and I, I was posting stuff on Facebook and copying it to Twitter and stuff during the broadcast. And one of the things that I posted was about, imagine if Julia Louis-Dreyfus wasn't great, how annoying this would be. You know what I mean? And you basically said the same thing. You basically said the same thing. And yeah, and she's so great. You can't, you know what I mean? Like, she won, you're like, okay, yeah, she won now six times in a row. But she's great. I mean, she's great. And the show is great, and she's great on it.
And she's also great in different ways each season. And that's the thing that's even more remarkable, because she could be doing basically the same thing on the same very high level, and it wouldn't be as impressive. You know, Candace Bergen, when she won all of those Emmys in a row, I don't know that I want to say that she was that far ahead of the rest of the competition. And I don't know that Julie Louis-Dreyfus is that far ahead of the competition, but she keeps each season only raising her game, and she doesn't necessarily need to do that. And so for everyone else in the comedy category, they just have one more year where they have to wait out, and then all they need to do is stay on TV until 2019, and then someone else can maybe win an Emmy in that category. It's amazing.
Yeah. But again, it's one of those things that could be annoying, but it isn't. We knew it was going to happen. You predicted it, Dan, and I was, you know, thinking about it as well. Alec Baldwin was going to win for Saturday Night Live. And I was just like, you know, when he won, that was the only one category where I went, ugh, because Louis Anderson was so remarkable on Baskets. He won last year, but he was even better, and they gave him a lot more stuff to do this season. So that was all the more disappointing that Alec Baldwin, who does – you know, it's fine doing the Trump thing. I really, that was the only time in the show when I was like, where I got aggravated because Louis Anderson didn't win.
That was probably the closest I got. Also, I've been led to believe that if I were a bigger fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, I probably would have been unhappy about the 5 minutes that were dedicated to the pointless telecasting of the reality series category that The Voice won, because a bunch of people check the same box every year.
Yeah.
I've been told that if I were a fan of, I'm a fan of other shows that I know are better than The Voice, so I know how bad and complacent a win that is.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm a Top Chef fanatic, so I was just, you know, like, oh God, give it to The Voice again. So.
But. Yeah, and even the nominees weren't really all that, you know, but they keep nominating Amazing Race, and that's completely on reflex. There's no excuse for nominating Amazing Race, particularly this year, but really probably for the last 4 or 5 years. They do it every year.
Yeah.
It is not a category that the TV Academy is using correctly, and it's not a category that is benefiting the telecast in any way, and I hope that they come to their senses and realize that what was cool 5 or 10 years ago in having the reality competition in the primetime show is no longer cool.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but that one moment of Louis Anderson not winning upset me. And I was, here's another thing. If I didn't like Veep, and I do like Veep, and Veep is terrific, I'd have been very upset because I so wanted Atlanta to win. And I know that it won in key, you know, in big ways. FX came out pretty big with Atlanta. But I really, really think that was the best show in that category. I think easily.
Ben, and I'm with you there, and I think I said this, you know, several places. I think it probably in some cases comes down to voters simply saying, okay, I want to laugh at my comedy series, and Atlanta made people laugh sometimes, but it also, God forbid, sometimes made people think and feel and challenge their preconceptions and stuff, whereas I would say without any hesitation that Veep is a funnier show.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the Emmy talk and more right here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio on a Tuesday morning. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6. We're talking with Dan Feinberg, who is putting in an extra visit with us just to talk about the Emmys from the other night. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
Pretty cool to see Norman Lear and Carol Burnett out there. That was pretty awesome.
That was a great moment. And then you were going, okay, well, once you've got those two out for comedy, how are they possibly going to top that for drama? And while Oprah is not Norman Lear in most ways, she's still a big enough name that you never feel as if bringing Oprah out there is going to it's going to be a not big deal. I mean, for heaven's sakes, half of the people accepting awards wanted to thank Oprah because she was sitting directly in front of them.
Right.
So I loved the John Oliver callback in his second win when he got up there and Oprah had briefly left her seat and he looked for her to thank her and instead found only her seat filler. That was fantastic.
The other thing that Oliver did that I loved was the hashtag DC public schools, which I did every time I posted, I hashtagged it, which was
it trended. And if you looked at the reactions from the DC public schools Twitter feed, they were very excited with the attention. I don't know what possible tangible impact it could have, but if it has any, excellent.
It was funny, and it was great. I mean, it's great. John Oliver is just great. You know, I mean, I'm stating the obvious, but he really is great, and he was great. You know, telling the band to play him off both times he came up to accept, I thought was really funny. And going back to Chappelle, who admits that he didn't come to rehearsal, fantastic. That made me crack up.
And there were very few bits of funny presenter patter, and I don't think probably that whatever was actually on the teleprompter in that circumstance was likely to be particularly funny.
Right.
So good on Dave Chappelle for making something funny out of nothing in particular.
Yeah.
So thank you, as always, Dave Chappelle.
Any big surprises, Dan? Any things that you were maybe shocked by or surprised by?
I don't know about shocked or surprised by, because I'm pretty sure it was the show I would have predicted to win. But I think the degree of Handmaid's Tale domination was a tiny bit surprising to me, just given how wide open every single category was and how many of those categories felt as if they were kind of a coin flip to some degree. And for every single one of those coin flips to go to Handmaid's Tale is impressive. And for Handmaid's Tale to become, speaking of first, the first streaming television thing, whatever you want to call that platform, to win either a drama series or comedy series Emmy, getting there ahead of Netflix, which probably thought it was going to get there 3, 4, 5 years ago,
right,
and ahead of Amazon, which certainly thought they were going to get there a couple of years ago with Transparent. And instead, there it is, little old Hulu, who most people don't know that they do original programming. I think that most people out there, not necessarily your listeners, but most casual TV viewers think of Hulu as the place where they go to watch CW and ABC shows the day after, and they have no idea that, for example, Hulu has a TV show starring Hugh Laurie that most people just don't know exists, or that Casual is a Hulu original show that got a Golden Globe nomination a couple of years ago,
yeah,
or that if anyone's wondering where Aaron Paul has been since Breaking Bad, he's on a Hulu show. There are just lots of those things. Hulu has never been able to have that break. And boy, oh boy, did they have that
break
on Sunday night.
Huge. It was absolutely huge. And I would like to, I know you're not a fan, but I'm a fan of Difficult People. That's another Hulu. It's a Hulu show that I enjoy quite a lot. So I did want to mention that. I have friends who don't have Hulu who have never seen Handmaid's Tale, and you know, some people are like, I don't want to subscribe to Hulu for just that one show. But they have more than that, and they have some good stuff. There's some good stuff on Hulu, and also for my liking, I can watch every episode of Saturday Night Live. Dating back, that's a big thing for me. So. Speaking of Saturday,
it's a very convenient service.
Yeah,
Hulu.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Speaking of Saturday Night Live, man, oh man! I mean, we knew that it was going to be a big year for them, but they won. I mean, did they win at like every category that they could have been nominated for?
I believe so. I'm trying to think if there was a writing category that they were up for that they didn't win for, but definitely they won for whatever their main category is, the variety series category, and they won for directing, and they won for Kate McKinnon and Alec Baldwin, who were both locks anyway. I think we all knew that this was a year when we were going to be honoring Saturday Night Live, and you know, whether or not one feels as if Saturday Night Live was truly better this year, I think without any question, they were more in the conversation than they've been in many years. And that's worth a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, did it win? I mean, this is 9 years ago, but did it win big in 2008 at the Emmys? Because that was a massive year for SNL.
It hasn't won the series category in 20 some odd years.
Wow.
It's been a long time. Wow. And Kate McKinnon is the first person, the first individual from performer from the show to win more than once. So that's also amazing. Or as in regular from the show to win more than once.
Right.
And as opposed to, I believe, Gilda Radner and Bill Murray, I think there were a few of them who had won one time, but she was the first to win in multiple years. And no, this was a year people talked about SNL, and that SNL put itself out there to be talked about, and it paid off in big ways. And it meant that while all of the other networks were totally invisible last night, NBC kept being up there. They won all those SNL things. They won Sterling K. Brown. They won for The Voice. You know, network TV may be struggling with the awards, but NBC sure made it look last night as if they're in the game. So good for them.
Yeah. One thing that you mentioned that you tweeted about, which makes me crazy every year, is people cheering during the In Memoriam. It makes me nuts. And you tweeted about that. It's like, it's not a popularity contest, like cheering louder for Carrie Fisher and then not for an agent is, I think, not cool. It's a varying degree of, oh, it was sadder that this person died than this person. It always makes me nuts when they do that.
And the problem is that it's as simple as cutting the house audio.
Yeah.
You just don't feed the house audio onto TV. You feed only the audio from the person singing at the microphone. It's not hard. You don't need to do anything other than make it so that you really can't hear the people out in the audience. And instead, you heard them every single time they clapped for anyone. And it was tacky and exactly the way it is at every award show, because it means that some people are just apparently not important enough in their death to get applause from an audience of Hollywood celebrities. And who wants to see that? And who wants to think that?
Did they? I'm assuming the package was put together before Harry Dean Stanton died.
I would assume that was the case. Yeah, I think they always have cutoffs for these things, and sometimes the cutoffs might be 36 hours, you know, in advance. And Harry Dean Stanton died on Friday, that was when the news came out. Yeah. So I think that's just probably too close, and presumably they will hopefully remember him next year, but. Yeah. They have to cut it off because you know how long the performance of the song is going to be. You know how long the reel has to be. And, you know, while it's easy to say, couldn't you just cut a tenth of a second off from everybody and add 10 seconds and add 2 seconds of Harry Dean Stanton? I guess they just don't want to do that. And so they will honor him next year.
They did not honor Toby Hooper, which made me angry. Because, I mean, he directed Salem's Lot, one of the classic miniseries ever, and I thought they were remiss in not including Toby Hooper. That made me a little angry.
I can accept that. I mean, yes, he's very clearly more of a theatrical film director, but Salem's Lot did and has freaked me out as a child and an older person. The vampire kid knocking at the bedroom window is... about as terrifying a scene as there's ever been.
Oh, yeah. Old James at 16 tapping on the window. That. okay. Before we let you go, two quick things. One, Better Things. I saw the first episode. I loved it. I thought it was great. And she's going in even a different direction than she went in the first season. How many have you seen of Better Things?
I've only seen 4, and I've already been told that I think the fifth one is the one that's going to blow me away. And for some reason, I just haven't been able to sit down and watch it because my colleague Tim reviewed it for The Hollywood Reporter, and so I didn't do that. And yeah, but the first 4 I've seen are terrific and uniformly terrific, and she directed all of them, and she could just as easily have won last night instead of Julie Louis-Dreyfus, and she did not, but maybe next year, or I guess maybe in 2019.
And the other thing, Big Brother finale tomorrow night. Do you even care?
I care, but just because trying to figure out how they're going to justify it not being this horrible, bitter thing with the jury.
Yep.
I mean, because Paul is the only one who deserves to win. But on the other hand, and this was the case with Paul last year, he's very, very smart, but he always does things that, like, twist the knife for absolutely no reason. And he did it constantly in, like, the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So he alienated a dozen people he didn't need to alienate. And so if he loses, it's because he, you know, he played a brilliant strategic game and he played a good social game, but he dropped the social ball. And
yeah. I was judging from the visit to the jury house last week. I think Christmas is going to win, man. I think Christmas is going to win.
I think it would be very funny, and you would just have to wonder what lesson he would learn if in consecutive years he lost to Nicole and to Christmas,
right,
in seasons where strategically he was the dominant player in the season, and if he would actually be able to walk away and say, okay, clearly I did something wrong. Because someone like Russell Hantz on Survivor had 2 consecutive seasons where he deserved to win in terms of pure strategic game.
Right.
And he lost both seasons because he was a horrible, horrible person and people didn't want to give him $1 million. And yet he couldn't understand that he did something wrong.
Right.
And
right.
I wonder if Paul would be able to realize that.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out on tomorrow night, Wednesday night. I'm looking forward to it. Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing the special appearance with us. And we'll talk to you a week from Thursday.
Sounds good, Nick.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's great. Hollywood reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, we'll take a quick break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.